It's never too early for Lowe's Black Friday deals. Snag some of our biggest savings of the season right now, like 25% off select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees. And get yourself free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit before the Black Friday rush. Because everyone loves free stuff, right? Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
How do you go back to your constituents and say, I voted against releasing the Epstein files?
Yeah, by the way, I wanted to protect a pedophile sex trafficking ring. Oh, okay.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks, it's Rick Wilson. Welcome back, as always, to the Lincoln Project podcast. We are absolutely delighted to have you with us today, but even more delighted to have Tara Palmieri with us, who is one of the most compelling writers about a subject you may have heard a little bit about in the last few days, the Jeffrey Epstein case. She's had a very broad political portfolio, but she has dug in on the Epstein case with a greater degree of granularity than almost any other person. She breaks massive scoops on this on her Substack, The Red Letter, which I really recommend you take a look at. And so, Tara, I want to jump right in. This has been a hell of a week.
I know. It's really been crazy. I feel like that email where Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein are talking about President Trump and spending time with a victim in the House, and you know, I immediately heard from one of the survivors in the morning being like, OMFG, this is a smoking gun to them. And it would be in a court of law. But according to the Republican Party and President Trump and the White House, it's nothing at all. There's nothing to see here, people.
I don't want to talk about it because fake news like you, you're a terrible reporter, and fake news like you, they just keep bringing that up to deflect from the tremendous success of the Trump administration.
What did Jeffrey Epstein mean when he said you knew about the girls? If the Epstein case is a hoax, why are you calling for more investigations?
Jeffrey Epstein and I had a very bad relationship for many years. But he also saw a strike because I was president. So he dictated a couple of memos to himself. Give me a break. You're going to find out what did he know with respect to Bill Clinton, with respect to the head of Harvard, with respect to all of those people that he knew, including J.P. Morgan Chase.
Sir,
yeah, Jennifer, go ahead. Go ahead.
Quiet, McGee.
And I just think the stonewalling is just, it just makes it worse. You got to, I mean, you know, a thing or two about how to manage things, Rick. Like, you've worked in politics
I've been around the block a really long time.
This is exactly what you're not supposed to do.
Yeah, the first thing you're in a crisis, you know, is get the truth out, because it's going to come out in this day and age. And, you know, you had Carolyn Leavitt basically making the case that, oh, these are all forged emails and they're all fake and they've all been created by the Democrats and it's all a hoax.
And it just shows how this is truly a manufactured hoax by the Democrat Party. For now, they're talking about it all of a sudden because President Trump is in the Oval Office. But when Joe Biden was sitting in there, the Democrats never brought this up. This wasn't an issue that they cared about because they actually don't care about the victims in these cases. They care about trying to score political points against President Trump.
I'm sorry. Unless the Democrats have a time machine, these were contemporaneous reflections of two sex traffickers talking about Donald Trump, who was clearly a man who intersected with their lives a lot more than he would like people to believe.
It's like, what do they do? Chat GPT, right? Like a crazed pedophile,
right?
Jeffrey Epstein. Also, the way he writes is really hard to mimic. I don't think you could just make that up.
I was saying that to my partner last night. She's like, does he speak English? It's like all these bizarre spaces and extra punctuation and no capitalization, but you still got the message through there that you know, Trump was, and the White House, or the, excuse me, the White House and the House GOP have outed the name. I'm not going to do anything about that until I talk to the family, but spent time with the victim. I mean, and the other thing that got me was he told Ghislaine to stop, but it wasn't about stopping overall. It was like, he didn't want her at the club at Mar-a-Lago doing what she was doing, recruiting
girls.
Which
is recruiting girls.
Right. And he, I mean, the only thing I keep coming away from him, like, he knew. The bullshit tornado of this White House cannot blow this one away. He knew. He knew what it was. Even if he wasn't, and these emails do not prove he had sex with anybody who was underage or who was trafficked, but he knew. You cannot come to another conclusion, especially in the emails between Michael Wolff and Epstein, right? I mean, this is so much damning connectivity here. I just find it stunning.
Absolutely, he knew. I don't know. I mean, Virginia herself said that she met him through Epstein. I mean, she worked in his spa, but like, she was never going to meet him working in the spa at Mar-a-Lago. Donald Trump, he's a huge celebrity. She told me that herself. It just, well, if you know someone's a pedophile and you don't do anything about it, don't you at some point enable that activity? Even if you can claim, like, I was friends with a pedophile for 10 years and I didn't partake in any of it. I looked the other way and allowed it. I mean, at what point do you, if that is all he did, then at what point do you not bear the guilt? I mean, we do know that there was one woman who went under the pseudonym Katie Johnson, who filed a suit against him claiming she was raped in Epstein's house right before the election. She dropped that suit. And then I interviewed Michael Cohen, who told me that there was another case that I never even heard of before that involved a Jane Doe I'd never heard of. He said that she filed with her mother and that they had to go and that Trump told him to fix it or figure it out. And they sent it a PI and then she dropped the suit. It's just, it's very weird. I just think there's a lot more we don't know. And every single day, I know that we learn that. Even the way that Epstein talks about Trump with such familiarity, like it just proves that they've known each other for the closeness in business. You know, he's sending over tips about his mortgage. They were bidding over property in Palm Beach. I mean, that's what broke them up, a business deal.
Yeah, everybody
has to also make you wonder how much, you know, because they were actually investigating Epstein for money laundering at one point in 2007, and they dropped it. Mm-hmm. You have to also wonder, like, what would have come up there? Is that what he's also worried about? Is perhaps, you know, money laundering investigations?
Remember last month we learned about Alex Acosta's testimony, Donald Trump's former Secretary of Labor and the prosecutor who just so happened to be behind Jeffrey Epstein's 2008 plea deal before landing in the Trump cabinet? Well, he told the House Oversight Committee that he did not recall any discussion of potential financial crimes as part of his office's Epstein investigation. But today, Bloomberg is reporting this revelation. Quote, emails and documents from Epstein's Yahoo account show that prosecutors in his office discussed the financial crimes component of the investigation with Acosta and copied him on correspondence about it. This information makes it incredibly clear that there is a massive cover-up happening right now. It appears that DOJ is likely sitting on evidence that Epstein's crimes were perhaps even bigger than have been publicly reported. I think this calls into question Acosta's entire testimony.
It is really difficult to comprehend how, on the one hand, former U.S. Attorney Alex Acosta said that his office, he said this during his testimony in September, that his office was focused predominantly on Epstein's sex crimes. But through these emails and other documents that we've obtained, we found that there was a real money laundering investigation taking place. And it went on for 18 months, beginning in February 2007, going all the way until June 2008, when Jeffrey Epstein pleaded guilty to that state charge in Florida.
Tara, a lot of these things were sort of floating around out there in the rumor sphere, in the news world, even back in 2015 and 16, that Trump was a creep, that Trump was a sexual abuser, that Trump was, you know, a guy who could not keep it in his pants for a very long time. People knew about this for a long time. Why is it that it takes these revelations finally from the Epstein estate giving these materials to Congress? Because this seems to me finally to be one of the first real times this has really gotten front page New York Times style focus. And it just, it's always seemed to be sort of a story that nobody really wanted to dig into, even though it spoke to Trump's character and spoke to Trump's activities, I think in a really profound way. You've certainly dug into it.
Yeah, no, I did. I did two podcasts on it. One with Adam McKay, the Hollywood director.
Yeah, we know Adam.
Julie K. Brown, who broke the story. She was Julie executive too. Producer. Yeah, and for the Miami Herald, and then another one with Sony Music. They were both with Sony, and Adam Davidson, who's an amazing journalist, was also executive producer. And the other one was on Ghislaine Maxwell and her family. Because she was really powerful at the time. And I think people don't quite understand that her father was on par with Rupert Murdoch before he died. And that he was such a close friend of Trump. I just think that this story is not going away. We haven't even gotten the files. These are just emails. That's all we have right now.
Right.
We don't even have the files yet. And I think people need to be reminded that there's so much more. 330,000 gigabytes is what they have right now. And we've only seen one percentage, I think they said.
Yeah, I mean, and then
they're all redacted. Everything that's been sent over is redacted, which is another fear. I think people are thinking that we're going to see these files if somehow Trump actually passes this bill, which I think will get to his desk. Yeah. I do. I really do think we'll get to his desk.
I think it'll get to his desk. I don't think he'll, the only way that happens is, and then we have another constitutional crisis. Massey is saying, you know, I need a veto-proof majority. And he could get there.
Veto-proof majority? I should know that.
Two-thirds.
Oh, two-thirds. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's very possible.
I don't know what the 435 times 66% is, but, you know, it'll be in that. Yeah.
I think it's possible.
I also think, I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm sensing and hearing from sources out there that the Republican wall in the House is one more email from cracking. There's starting to be some real nervousness among these people who have been like, oh, nothing. It's a nothing burger for years. And now they're like, ew.
Bitter divide in Washington has turned some of the most loyal friends into enemies. It's just one part of the fallout that appears to have a direct connection to a vote on Capitol Hill to release the files of the late convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein. The tension between the top two leaders of the MAGA movement now on display for all to see.
The bitter brawl between President Donald Trump and Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene escalating rapidly in Washington. The president calling his former partner in MAGA, Marjorie Traitor Greene, also withdrawing his endorsement of her. For Congresswoman Greene, the fight stems from the president abandoning his promise to put the American people first.
What the American people voted for with MAGA was to put the American people first and stop sending foreign aid and stop being involved in foreign wars. Cost of living is far too high. Health insurance is completely out of control.
But the rift mostly stems from her support for a discharge petition that will force a vote in the House of Representatives to have files related to convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein released to the public.
They're using Jeffrey Epstein as a deflection from the tremendous success that we're having as a party.
While President Trump has not been accused of any criminal wrongdoing in the matter, he and Epstein were known to be friends for a time. And his name is mentioned multiple times in a batch of 20,000 pages of emails just released to the public.
I have no idea what's in the files. I can't even guess, but that is the questions everyone is asking, is why fight this so hard?
Part of Trump's fight, calling the effort a hoax, and directing the Justice Department to investigate Democrats named in the files, including former President Bill Clinton, former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, and LinkedIn founder Reid Hoffman.
President Trump has clean hands. He's not worried about it. I talk to him all the time. He has nothing to do with this. He's frustrated that they're turning it into a political issue, and it's not surprising because the Democrats have nothing else to talk about. What have they accomplished in 10 months? Epstein is their entire game plan. So we're going to take that weapon out of their hand this week.
A vote in the House to release the remainder of the Epstein files could come as soon as Tuesday. If it passes, it would then be sent to the Senate. And if it passes there, it would be sent to President Trump to sign into law, something he's highly unlikely to do.
No, it's cracking. Yeah. I heard this before the emails.
Right.
If the bill was on the floor, they were going to have to vote. And they were already cracking. It's happening. I mean, and I think once a handful of them do it, and it's not, they can dismiss Lauren Boebert, they can dismiss Nancy Mace or Marjorie Taylor Greene. But once you've got like Greg Stube, you know, you've got Don Bacon, you've got Burchett and others, I think you can't. How do you go back to your constituents and say, I voted against releasing the Epstein files?
Yeah, by the way, I wanted to protect a pedophile sex trafficking ring. Oh, okay. But I want to talk about Ghislaine for a second because you mentioned her a minute ago and it triggered something with me. Even these emails, even this one little tranche of emails shows us that Todd Blanche, who has access to all this stuff, by the way, folks, he has access to all this. Todd Blanche knew about these things before he sat down with Ghislaine Maxwell to make her a sweetheart deal to send her to Club Fed and get her a puppy. Talk to me about what you think Ghislaine's end game is obviously getting a pardon. A commutation would do, but a pardon would be much better for her. What do you think her chances are as of right now?
I mean, very high.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he pardons her or commutes her sentence, which I'm sure you have to, she's 60 years old.
Right.
I mean, I think first is obviously the commutation. It suggests that there was no guilt. He's not guilty. This is all a hoax. There's no reason she should be in prison. I mean, it's just, it's a way for him to say there's no guilt associated with this crime. I think there would be national outrage. People would lose it. But I think he'll do it at the same time as he pardons Diddy, so that there'll just be like so much moral obfuscation and people. Not that I don't think what Diddy did isn't horrible. I just think it'll just cause so much outrage. It'll be a chaos moment.
Sean Diddy Combs.
Right.
Would you consider pardoning him?
Well, he was essentially, I guess, sort of half innocent.
Yes.
I don't know what they do. He's still in jail or something. But he was celebrating a victory, but he seems, I guess, it wasn't as good as a victory. Probably, I was very friendly with him. I got along with him great. And seemed like a nice guy.
Just kind of like what they tried to do yesterday when they're like, fine, let's dump all of it. And then have journalists, you know, chasing all the shiny moments, shiny objects in these files. Listen, why were they even sitting down with a woman who was charged with perjury? Why are they sitting down with a woman who is a convicted sex offender? Why are they like, not just a sex offender, a trafficker of children? Like, why does her word have any weight at all? She should be in a supermax away from.
Right.
What do we
know about people who molest children? They are practiced sociopaths and liars. They will do anything to get what they want.
There's no other way to trick a child into like coming into your orbit. It's insane.
So speaking of that, I just want to make sure our listeners know this. The case in which Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty was still only the tip of the iceberg. They only selected a portion of the large class of harm she had done, and it was an open and shut slam dunk case. There's no question about what she did. I mean, tell folks why they should understand the severity of what she did and how clear and crisp that case was against her.
Well, when the FBI presented the case, they said there were as many as 1,000 victims.
Right.
Of Epstein's trafficking, not specifically hers, but they really, they they were unsparing in their characteristic of her, saying she slithered away into a hideaway. They painted a characteristic of a depraved woman who would do anything for wealth that she was getting from Jeffrey Epstein, because after her father died, her wealth was gone. He was stealing money from the pensioners of the Mirror, the newspaper that he owned. And she wanted to continue living a lavish lifestyle. And for her, her job was grooming children and recruiting children. And they used three Jane Does. They didn't even use Virginia Giuffre, who obviously has an incredibly harrowing tale of being trafficked by them, living under their, enslavement, you could say, for 2 years. She says she uses the word sex slave as a witness, because they had so many others. And one of the girls was brought to Epstein at 14. Another one, Annie Farmer, who's spoken out, was flown to another state where this happened. They had a lot of options, but they kept the window really narrow for the years that they were going to try her for, so that it was just such a clear cut case. But they could have kept going for days. But these cases there was just so much overwhelming evidence. And again, there's so much more. There is so much more that still hasn't come out.
I mean, it's an iceberg, right? I mean, I've interviewed Virginia Giuffre's family members. I've interviewed Amy Wallace, Julie K. Brown, Jess Michaels. I've gotten horribly sort of dug into this thing now, because it has this terrible magnetic draw of trying to get these stories out there into the world. It makes you want to recoil from it. It is like the depravity and the degeneracy of these people is so off the chain and so insanely obvious. I can't imagine how the Deputy Attorney General of the United States went into that room. They played footsie for a couple of days, and they thought, wow, you know, the best thing to do right now is to move her to a minimum security prison and give her a puppy.
Yeah. It's just a horrible thing. It's really disgusting.
It's important to keep in mind that Ghislaine Maxwell already was getting special treatment because she was not eligible to be transferred to this minimum security prison camp in Texas from her low security facility in Florida because she's a sex offender. And when we talked to prison experts about that, they couldn't think of any other time that had ever happened in modern history.
Donald Trump has always been able to get out of his problems by generating a bigger problem. He's been able to get out of you know, grab them by the pussy by saying something even more outrageous the next day. And This feels to me, I would get your feelings on this. This feels to me like we're getting toward the end of the road. I mean, short of nuking Venezuela, I don't know what he does right now to change this subject. This does not seem like there's a window where Congress is just going to say, yeah, never mind. Forget it. It's okay. Or where Pam Bondi and Todd Blanche, Akash Patel, and Dan Bongino are going to get a pass if there are Democrats in the majority next year, where they're not going to be dragged every day in front of committees and asked these questions about, what did Trump tell you to do? What did he direct you to do?
When I don't think they'll answer any of it.
No, they won't answer it, but they'll end up, if it's Democratic majority, they'll end up in a constant stream of exposure. And I think, I have a theory of the case. The biggest mistake Pam Bondi made, or Patel made, I don't know who pulled the trigger on it, was assigning 1,000 FBI agents to go over all these documents. Because with 1,000 people involved, yeah, the old rule of espionage is 3 people can keep a secret if 2 of them are dead. Well, with 1,000 people, don't you think there's going to be folks who looked at it and said, I can't morally ride this train. I can't do this.
What's holding them back, Rick? It's been a while.
It has been. I mean, fear of retribution is probably pretty high in this administration.
That's
They're seeing,
true.
You know, Comey you and Brennan and everybody else getting dinged.
Yeah, seek political refuge somewhere if you're going to do it.
Yeah.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
But I mean, it just strikes me like he's wiggled out of so much. And this seems to be the one persistent theme he cannot escape.
Maybe they're holding on to it, looking for the right time.
Could be. Could be.
I have a feeling the House Dems were probably holding on to this one for a while.
You know, I also have a feeling, and God knows, I'm perfectly happy to be critical of them when they screw things up. But I kind of admire how they have been disciplined about this. And they obviously haven't given out all the candy here. They clearly have more in the stack. That's got to be concerning the DOJ and the White House at a very high level right now.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. They can't. Like, they had to do that before the vote to make sure that Boebert and Mace did not remove their names from the discharge petition.
Right.
Yeah, right. I think you're right. That was timed.
It does strike me that if you bring members of Congress down to the White House, you don't bring them in the Situation Room for no reason. You put them in there so nobody can record it. You put them in, including them. You put them in there so nobody has a phone, including them. You put them in there so that it's going to be a he said, she said recounting at the end of it. But the pressure campaign seems to have failed on most of the people they've gone after so far.
Yeah, someone was saying to me they probably have dirt on Boebert. But she probably doesn't care. I mean,
she jacked a guy off in a theater. I think she's got a pretty low shame threshold at this point.
I know. I was like, you're not really dealing with normal people.
So let me ask you this also. We have this ongoing drip, drip, drip. And Epstein seems very candid about Trump in a lot of these emails back and forth with Maxwell. Do you think that there is any world in which one of these emails leads to, I mean, maybe it's too late now, it leads to any legal repercussions for Trump? I mean, even if there's an email somewhere that Jeffrey says, yes, he raped that 14-year-old girl in my house.
No, I'm sure first of all, as long as it's his Justice Department, I don't think so.
Right.
Maybe if they could say in my house in New York, there might be cause to bring it up. And if the outcry is loud enough, although like could really backfire in the same way that the indictments did.
Makes him into a martyr.
Yeah, somehow. I don't know how you turn someone who's accused of pedophilia into a martyr, but God knows anything can happen. Mm. This is America. And but seriously, like, I don't, that would be probably the only way, I think, if he does it in a place where there's a hunger to prosecute him and there's enough evidence. But I don't think it would happen rapidly. Like, I think they'd have to put together a bulletproof case.
Sure.
And figure out who that victim is.
With a live victim who would testify in public.
Right.
And
the victim would also have to be willing to testify. And as we saw with the case of the woman who accused Trump before the election, she dropped it the day before, citing intimidation and like never to be seen again. So
I've always
wondered.
Scary
thing to go up against the president.
Yeah. I've always wondered, like, there's some process internally to Trump's thinking on this that he had a vulnerability and people around him knew it. Bannon and Epstein, that's a relationship that I'm actually, let me change the subject for a second. Cause that I thought about this when I was thinking about this podcast today. Bannon and Epstein were spending a lot of time together toward the end of Epstein's freedom.
Yeah. Haven't we heard the Bannon tapes yet? When are we going to get those?
Is it like 24 hours worth of interviews that he took from him? I mean, he has some enormous amount of tape that Bannon has. And you know, you see Bannon in some of this email traffic. You see Michael Wolff in some of this email traffic. There seems to me to be that other people who were very close to Trump and understood Trump very well also have stories they should be telling right now, because otherwise they are literally part of covering up a pedophile ring.
Yeah. I mean, I really think whatever Michael Wolff is holding on to, he needs to tell. And
100%.
I just think those emails were really horrific. I mean, giving him public relations advice, giving him advice on how to blackmail someone.
Telling him how to make Trump owe him a debt.
Yeah, look,
I like Michael. He's personable, but I was the last few days I've been like, when I saw those emails, I was just a little bit shocked because I'm like, This doesn't feel like journalism to me.
No.
This feels like a player. This feels like somebody, like, from my world, like an operative, going, yeah. How do we manage this crisis? You know, how do we work this crisis together? And it just really didn't sit with me the right way. I don't know about you.
No, I didn't like it. Mm-mm. Not for me.
And look, Wolf is impeccably sourced. He knows a lot of people. I know he knows a lot of people because I know people who talk to him.
I also wonder how much of this stuff he's... Sometimes
I know some people who talk to Michael Wolff. I know who some of those people are. And Michael and I have some... it's not a closely overlapping Venn diagram, but we know a lot of the same people in the same Trumpian universe who still play both sides. And they're not the most senior people at the White House anymore. They used to be. They're not anymore. But what he knows from these communications with Epstein will eventually come out. More of these emails will come out. The Democrats in the House have more of these emails, Michael. And I think he's in a really weird situation because, and I'm not a journalist, so I'm not going to say I can judge all journalism, but a lot of those emails didn't feel like journalism.
Look for the business, but we're not all Michael Wolffs. I mean, a lot of other journalists think he's a fabulist and the story is like, listen, everybody's got a Michael Wolff story. So
I'm just curious. Also, it's like
sometimes people will come to me with like a Michael Wolff thing they heard, and I'm just like, I can't right now. This is not
But you also had other New York Times reporters.
Can you put it in a tip box, please?
You also had other New York Times reporters rabbit hole down. talking to Epstein, in ways that didn't feel. I mean, was part of this, and I think maybe we all. Epstein existed in a lot of ways before social media, in a weird way. His horrifying activities that were active before social media was at the scale it is today.
Yeah, there was MySpace, and the prosecutors in Florida who were being directed by Alan Dershowitz basically scanned the MySpaces of these young girls and tried to paint the suggestion that they were loose girls.
Yeah, they were doing the nutter a slut defense for Epstein, essentially.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, they were party really girls.
This letter from Epstein attorney Jack Goldberger calls a victim's credibility highly questionable, citing, among other things, nude and suggestive photos and boasting about underage drinking, all posted on MySpace. Victim's MySpace pages printed out and sent to influence prosecutors as Epstein's attorneys were meeting to work out a deal. Well, after Palm Beach investigators searched Epstein's mansion and heard from teenage girls accusing him of touching them inappropriately during massages in his Palm Beach home. This letter, sent from Epstein's famed defense attorney Alan Dershowitz to the Palm Beach police, tried to discredit one of those girls, questioning her character because she calls herself Pimp Juice and references marijuana on MySpace. In one letter sent before Epstein's June 2006 indictment, an Epstein attorney writes to prosecutors, "We are mindful of your concern about labeling the girls prostitutes." Despite those concerns, Epstein would later be charged with soliciting prostitution.
I also don't understand why Alan Dershowitz does so much press around this when he's so closely connected to the story.
Look, I mean, there is a PR theory that you run to the gun. You know,
is that
run towards the sound of the guns.
Okay.
Because every time you see Dershowitz, it's like he pretends that it just was like ordinary course of business. He's just my friend. And Olga, the elderly masseuse, was the only woman I ever met and nothing untoward happened.
Yeah, sure, he pal. Told the God, yeah.
Sure, pal.
Yeah, apparently he told one of the witnesses to say that I interviewed, the houseman. It's just like, dude, you were hanging out with him. You were his friend. You represented him. You think you look good in this?
I think he's like in that
good?
Yeah, I think he's
like, I'm not an elite. That's what he says. The guy who
I'm not
like,
an elite with my home on Martha's Vineyard. I'm not an elite. Okay.
The Harvard Law professor who has a he said I have a modest home on the Upper East Side. Yeah, yeah sure.
Right. No. Right. And a place on the vineyard. So sure. You're just salt of the earth, Alan Dershowitz.
That was yesterday on Piers Morgan. I almost gagged. I was like, oh God, can we please like what universe do you live in? Also, there's like some old pup. There's some old posts that he's like defending kiddie porn online.
Jesus Christ. I had to know that.
Yeah. Like it was a legal defense of it. Or of like looking at it. It was very bizarre. I mean, one of the victims found it in the Wayback Machine.
Right.
The amazing thing about the victims of Jeffrey Epstein is that they are so good at sleuthing on their own case. They really are. They spend a lot of time at it. Like the one that showed me that Lisa Murkowski was mm-hmm. hanging out with Ghislaine Maxwell and she had known Ghislaine Maxwell's husband for decades because he was doing business in Alaska and they were on the speaking circuit together that Ghislaine Maxwell was using to launder her name, her reputation.
Right. She went out to become like an environmental activist or some bullshit after she broke up with
Jeff. Terramar was her nonprofit.
Right.
Oceans. And so her husband that she met at an event that he was speaking at that one, I think Murkowski beamed in my video, but another one they all spoke together. That was the one that Glenn stole the guy from his wife and children. People don't know that Ghislaine Maxwell was married when she went to prison. Like they just like.
Right.
There's like, so much random stuff that they don't know about this story, but it's just the more you know, the weirder it is. And
yeah, I mean, she strikes me as like somebody raised in that super creepy environment with her father, which as you point out, was a very wealthy media magnate, folks. Those of us who survived the 80s remember him, but he was the Rupert Murdoch before Rupert Murdoch was fully Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, they were rivals for sure.
Yeah, they did not. There was no love lost there, but you know her behavior with Epstein and in this whole process, it just strikes me again as like both of them managed to find ways to access this world of power and money, and it strikes me that some of this is still Trump trying to play protection ball for some of his friends that are still out there, who we know. We're facing, you know, Leon Black, people like that, who we know were facing very serious civil and criminal exposure on this.
That last night he met with all these heads of the banks, like Jamie Dimon,
right.
Mark Rowan, who actually had to like step down from his post for all of his mm-hmm. associations with Epstein. And it's just like, oh, it's the financial, it's all of the Epstein's friends that would hang out, you know.
We are expecting those heavy hitters here at the White House, but the White House is not really offering any detail on this dinner tonight other than that they are hosting it with financial leaders from across the economy. No explanation from the White House sort of why they're doing this now, what particularly is on the agenda, but take a look at this list of some of the heavy hitters that we do expect reportedly to be there, including the CEOs of J.P. Morgan, the NASDAQ, Blackstone, Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, and Goldman Sachs, all of those leaders are expected to be here tonight.
Jamie
Dimon, I don't know what, he banked Epstein after he went to prison. Yeah, that was classy.
Yes, he was still doing transfers for Epstein's, the trust.
Two girls. And Jess Staley, who was one of their top executives there, you know, is seen emailing Epstein asking for Snow White or Beauty and the Beast. It's like, what is going on
and,
here?
My favorite one from these email transfers was he emails Tom Brock, send me a picture of you and the child.
I just can't like,
what
when
the
I see
fuck?
Too, like Larry Summers is emailing with him. It's like, bro, it's 2017.
By this point, Google fucking exists, people.
Yeah.
This wasn't a secret that the guy had literally been convicted.
I don't know why anyone would have spent any time with him in any other world in which he was not a rich man. He would not be allowed on anyone's block.
I think that's clearly the Rosetta Stone of all of this. This is that confluence of power and money and abuse of people who are further down the economic chain than all these people were. And in a weird way, you know, a lot of these people he's talking to were much more powerful than Trump before Trump was president.
Well, they were richer, certainly.
Yeah, all these people, right, had more money.
Celebrity and media power, but yes.
Right. More money, more influence, all that stuff. What do you think drew Epstein to Trump? Was it the celebrity or was it, I had an argument, somebody made an argument to me that that once Trump became this like Palm Beach guy, there was more recruiting potential down there for Epstein. And that's why he sort of maintained that vibe with Trump.
Like Epstein writes about passing off girlfriends to Trump. I mean, right. Andrew Launey couldn't get his book published in the U.S. because he wrote that Epstein handed Melania over to Trump.
Right.
Like, yeah, they were friends in Palm Beach and Trump used to have parties at Mar-a-Lago. And actually, I would say that they were probably rivals in terms of their net worth at that time. When they were in their 40s.
$200 million at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, they were rivals in terms of their net worth. It was before Epstein had multiple. Like, I think at that point, he probably only had, I don't know if he had the island at that point. It's hard to say. Although when Les Wexner certainly helped his wealth.
Oh, Les Wexner is the enabler of so much of this stuff with Epstein. It's just, you know, another story.
The founder of Victoria's Secret. Mm-hmm. Really knows how to find friends. And at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has his beauty contests and his modeling agency. And guess who also has a modeling agency at the time? Jeffrey Epstein.
Epstein.
These are easy feeders of women from all over the world. During that time, there was a very fine line between trafficking women and modeling when you're recruiting from Eastern Europe, especially.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Not they just Eastern Europe, but really anywhere where the women don't have money.
All those girls were living in those like dorm-like apartment buildings in New York. And some days they were modeling and some days they were escorting, to put it as mildly as I can. Which, you know, that's always been another set of those question marks about Melania. Like, what was the relationship with Epstein? And you know this better than most people. But she was friends with one of these other modeling agent guys who was another Epstein pal. All these people that... It's so weird how many of these Venn diagrams, all the circles all intersect in New York in that period in the 2000s with Epstein, with Trump, with the modeling agencies, with John Casablancas or whatever.
The 90s.
I mean, the first time I ever heard Jeffrey Epstein's name, I was doing a lot of work down in Palm Beach for a bunch of these very wealthy billionaire developers who a lot of them were bigger than Trump, but just kept their mouth shut. They were New York guys who also did business down in Florida, you know, Miami and Palm Beach. And the first time I ever heard his name was probably in like maybe 2000, maybe 99 or 2000. And it was basically like, yeah, he's a degenerate. He's a fucking weirdo. I had nothing about the girls, but it was like, if somebody in Palm Beach tells you somebody's a degenerate,
it's a high bar. Yeah, Florida has a very high weirdo to normal.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tara, I appreciate you coming on today. It's such a great conversation. You know so much about this. I hope you are writing a big fat book about this entire thing because...
Oh, I could never do that to myself, Rick. That would literally...
You are the greatest chronicler in a lot of ways of some of this stuff.
You know what? If you want to keep following it, go to the Tara Palmieri Show. It's a podcast on YouTube and everywhere else you get your podcasts and the Red Letter.
And check her out on the Red Letter on Substack. It's terrific.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, that's where you can find my work. I do not think I could ever put all of this in one book. I think it would just... How could you live in that space for so long?
That's the thing. It's like the new book I'm writing is not really a Trump book. It's kind of he's in it as a sort of character, but it's not really a Trump book. And I found myself able to write faster and better than I thought I would. If it had been another Trump book, it would have been like, God, I still have to live in this fucking sewer.
Yeah.
You know, for another 100,000 words. And I could see where this would be. I mean, reading, you know, Nobody's
and
Girl.
Also, I want to write the definitive book, you know, maybe that'll happen in my lifetime. I hope so. You can follow the breaking news day to day. I also cover politics, so it's not only Epstein.
Right. Yeah,
but...
I should say, like I said at the beginning, you're not just an Epstein reporter. You've got a wide purview.
Yeah, I used to be a White House correspondent. I covered Trump for ABC News, which that was crazy being there. Wild, but yes, but right now, I am very committed to this story. And I also want to make sure that the victims are not forgotten in all of the craziness, because they're the ones who are really hurting right now. And
for sure,
who see a smoking gun and wonder why America doesn't see the same thing that they. And when I say America, I mean the leaders of this country don't see the same.
Well, I hope that you will keep on pressing this case forward, because you have been, like I said, an amazing chronicler of it from the beginning. And as you just pointed out, the victims deserve great reporting on this.
Thanks, Rick.
People talking about the truth about it. So I appreciate
you
very much.
I appreciate you highlighting it. That means a lot to me. I know you have a really big audience, and I'm really impressed with everything you guys have built. So,
well, all right. Well, let's talk again soon, my friend.
Talk soon.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joey Wartner-Cheney. Edited by Riley Main. Hey, folks, if you want to support the Lincoln Project's work against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and this MAGA craziness, go to action.lincolnproject.us/helplp. If you'd like to get in touch or have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just want to say hi, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. For our MAGA friends, please, no more nudes. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next time.
Good night, and good luck.